Hello everyone, welcome to the NRF1 podcast on Audio Boom on iTunes, on Future Radio of course, in Norwich. We really do hope this finds you well as we review the Mexican Grand Prix, round 19 of the 2016 Formula One World Championship, episode 137 of the podcast, and I think it might be a cracker too. My name is Michael Bailey, I am a sports journalist in Norwich and I'm here to bring you all of the top discussion points. With me, my top panel of one-time Carter and big F1 fan, Kyle Cumbers, and F1 aficionado and big Lewis Hamilton fan, Stephen Rust. Gents, I hope this finds you well. Let's just tap into the feelings on the race in a word or a noise, Kyle.
Slow burner.
Slow burner.
Would that be a way to describe it?
With a hyphen, yes, I'll give you that.
Yeah, it wasn't... It was interesting way to describe the race, that's what I was saying.
I found it quite captivating in a way, and I've watched the last two races live, which is nice. I haven't had a chance to do it much this season. Did hold my attention. You weren't so sure, were you, Steve?
Draggy in 1-1.
It was a drag race.
Just a bit, yeah. It was just a bit at the start and the end, best bits, and I just sort of found it just a bit draggy, really. You know, it just seemed to be a bit slow going, not much action between the start and end.
Well, that would make it sound like we haven't got anything to talk about. But we have got lots to talk about. We're going to start, as we've tended to most of the season, with the title race and with the Mercedes. The big news, of course, Lewis Hamilton winning the race from pole, Nico Rosberg finishing second from second. The championship lead for Nico was 26 points at the start of the weekend. It is now down to 19, which is, of course, less than one race win and one DNF, which makes it interesting. But there's only two races left to go. Brazil coming up and then Abu Dhabi to finish it off. One DNF might sort it all. We're at such a close end to the season now that any mistake, anything can decide this. It makes it exciting, Kyle.
Yes, and especially as we go to Brazil next time, which is a place anything can happen.
It's also a place Lewis never won.
Which is crazy, really, isn't it? I mean, he must have won every other track. I had to hear a stat. I think it's 23 tracks. Different tracks he's won at now, wow. So which is equal to Schumacher's record. So it's especially as his great fondness of Ayrton Senna. I'm sure he's desperate and even more desperate now to continue his good form and win there.
Absolutely, and that one is coming up. It's worth saying that Lewis Hamilton's win takes him to 51 Grand Prix victories. It takes him level with Alain Prost in second the all-time list. Only Michael Schumacher has more. Mercedes have won 17 of 19 races this season as well, which is quite ludicrous. Where do we see this then? It was fascinating. I mean, Lewis had a relatively straightforward race of it. Ultimately, we'll get into some of the nitty-gritty. He seemed quite calm and relaxed, possibly even down almost, in the green room after the race. And it looked very relaxed between Lewis and Nico. And Nico has said how relaxed that atmosphere has been, which... strange, because, you know, 2 years ago they were throwing caps at each other.
I think it's a strange situation that we're in where almost the pressure is off on both of them, whereas Nico knows he's only really just got to finish second or maybe some thirds. He's got a bit of a comfort margin. Hamilton knows even if he wins all of the races, that still might not be enough. So I think, whilst he said after the race, if I can kind of finish the season and know that I did the best I did could, he said I'll be happy with that. So I think he's almost sort of subdued to the fact that it just might not be enough, even if he has a pretty solid run to the end of the season, which, yeah, the last couple of races so far so good. But I think it's just a bit of a strange situation where it's a bit of a foregone conclusion, but, you know, you just don't know what can happen. One race can change all of that. And suddenly things can, temper-wise, can change, moods and attitudes. Who knows? We'll have to see.
It's been sort of almost serene progress reliability-wise for Nico, but we'll touch on the start in a bit, but Lewis's big lock-up, Mercedes worried about that vibration knocking out his suspension and causing him a real issue over the race. And Nico, they're possibly just taking care of his engines because he hasn't got any more, and if he had to replace one, that would be it. A penalty, which he's not going to want in the next two races.
I think they definitely have gone a little bit cautious since Malaysia. I think they've even admitted it themselves, which is understandable because the sort of title or constructors' titles wrapped up. They don't want anything to happen because of the amount of bad publicity they'll get if something does. But and they know they're quick enough to they can turn the engines down a little bit. I don't know if this is a bit of a disadvantage for Hamilton. And I know, obviously, he's worried about his engines, but in a weird way, he might want them pushing each engine to see if there is any unreliability. But yeah, I think it's just, in a weird way, I think it may be Rosberg being cautious that may cause his downfall. As in, we've seen it before when people have, even Lewis Hamilton himself in 2007 when he went to Brazil, fifth place is all he needed, and funny enough, you sometimes end up in fifth place just trying to hang on. And that's like in other sports, in football, if you've got a lead and you're hanging on for the last 10 minutes, you sometimes stuff happens which you don't want to happen. But yeah, I think he's got to be careful. He's got to keep looking forward instead of looking behind Rosberg.
Kyle sounds hopeful that Lewis might still win the World Championship. That's what I take from that. There was a fascinating graphic, I think it was a Formula One graphic, on the lead out lap that they showed, which was the swing of the championship lead between Nico and Lewis. And you realise, I kind of did a quick toe tap, I didn't pause it or anything, but basically Lewis Hamilton has probably only led for about 4 or 5 race weekends the entire season. He had a massive deficit to build back in the first half of the season. He then got ahead, he obviously went in Britain as well, and then since the second half of the season it's disappeared again. Yet most people, he's been the favourite, he's obviously going for a Ford World title, but it's just not been like that this year ultimately.
No, I mean, it's mostly been the reliability issue. I mean, he did have some bad starts, to which I did read somewhere recently that he'd been working quite hard recently back in Brackley, and he's found the sort of core root of the problems. But, you know, there was sort of really the starts can probably account to some races, but most of it, let's be honest, it has been reliability. Malaysia was a classic example. I mean, if you plussed 25 points on to his total now, we'll be having a completely different conversation about how do we think the rest of the season's going. So, and that's just one race, and there's several more you could look back. So that's mostly what it's been down to, really. But it's Formula One. It happens, that's the way it goes.
If it was fair, it would happen once to Nico Rosberg, but we would have to see. We don't normally touch much on qualifying, but I did want to mention it because Hamilton Lewis was perfectly fine through qualifying. He had it nailed. He had his car sorted. Nico really struggled, and he pulled it out of the bag basically at the end to take second on the grid, which was such a crucial thing for him to do. I mean, I would give him stick no ends up if I could, Nico. I'm not the biggest fan, but he really delivered when he needed to, and it, you know, was crucial for the race as well.
Yeah, I think because he was in fourth before, and then that's that little road further back, and you know, anything could happen in the first corner. But yeah, sort of, I think he has improved this year on times when he's needed a good lap, or he's been very consistent in qualifying. I think he's qualifying on the front row is
every he's qualified in the top two every race this season. So I would assume that also extends back into last season. I haven't checked, but it's a phenomenal record basically.
So he got 3 or 4, 5 poles I think at the end of last season, so he's put himself in the right position, and he has improved on that last year. And he always comes back. You know, he's quite mentally strong, and in a way, he, like you said after the race, Lewis was quicker this weekend. That's fine, I'll move on to the next one. And some people have to big themselves up and give reasons why they didn't win, but sometimes he just goes, fair enough, and then moves on. And that seems to work for him. So he's definitely improved this year. But we'll see.
Kyle, love it. We've got to touch on the start as well. Hamilton has been working on them. It was slightly scratchy. He got almost a little bogged down at the start, but managed to then sort of pull away from Rosberg, who was then quite lucky with Verstappen, I thought. And Lewis then outbraked himself, so he had to go off the track. And this kind of, there's obviously a lot of penalty discussions we're going to have later on, but Daniel Ricciardo wasn't happy with the fact that Lewis Hamilton didn't get a penalty for basically going off the track, rejoining still ahead of everyone. In fact, he had a bit of a bigger lead. And this idea now that you're ahead of someone, you go off the track, rejoin in the same position, yet you have to hand a position over that you never lost anyway, it's a really difficult one. The sporting regulations changed, of course. I've got article 27.5 here, which states, no car may be driven in a manner which could be potentially dangerous to other drivers. Furthermore, articles 27.8 prohibits any manoeuvre liable to hinder any drivers, such as any abnormal change in direction, which I guess touches on some other stuff that we're going to get involved in. But should Lewis have been penalised for going off the track, or was his penalty not the fact that he went on the grass and it could have caused him damage?
I thought there was two sides to it, but I thought he was actually quite lucky to just to escape an investigation. I'm not really sure if there had been an investigation, whether a penalty would have been maybe a bit too harsh, but I thought he was lucky to escape just the stewards looking at it, because although I think it was sensible what he did, because I think if he had just continued braking, I think he would have just caused an accident with people behind. So in taking evasive action like he did, I think that was actually a safety mechanism. But it sort of, when you look at various different angles of replays, I did feel that he kind of gained a bit of an advantage. I mean, it certainly slowed him down, but when you kind of looked at the gap that he had before the incident, or during it if you like, to then what he then had afterwards, I think he did gain a little bit, but I think he was lucky to get away with just an investigation on that. But after the race, he did actually sort of say that he didn't lock his tyres up, by the way. He actually said on the formation that he noticed he had a glaze on his tyres, and he thought that that wouldn't be a problem. And when he came to his braking zone for turn one, he laid onto the brakes not too hard, you know, as a normal way, and that just locked that exact tyre up, which then caused the flat spot on that tyre, which then caused all the vibrations that he had for that whole first 17, 18 lap stint.
So it was the glaze on the tyre that maybe got it stuck?
That's what he said. Wow. He's the one driving the car, you know. I don't know.
That's an interesting one. And we will touch on this as well. We're touching on a lot of things today, by the way. Sky News just agreeing with your point there, Steve, as the chime chirped in. Do we see, was there much of a difference then between what Lewis did and then what Verstappen did with Vettel, basically going off the track and coming back on to preserve a position which ultimately cost him third place?
And the only difference, partly it was lap one, and drivers are allowed to get away with more on lap one. Also the fact that two people behind him, Verstappen and Rosberg.
Lewis. Yes.
They both done something wrong themselves. I mean, Verstappen dived down the inside of Rosberg and pushed him off track, and then Rosberg then cut the corner. So they've gained advantage by doing wrong. So I suppose, how do you penalise Hamilton? And also, they then had the safety car, which punched them up anyway. But I really do hate this whole running off track and sort of just continuing to say, well, I was ahead in the corner in the first place. Well, there's a track. You should have to stop on the track or stay within the track. But then how do you penalise people? There's such a grey area. And unless you have gravel traps and walls, it's really hard to... I mean, you remember Alonso done it in Austin. I mean, he took somebody who went straight on at the end of the long straight and then kept his place, and it happens all the time, but it's such a grey area. That is the problem.
It's a complete mess. It's almost as if we needed track limits rules. But we'll go into that. And as you said, the fact that they've made everywhere so easy to run off in so many situations, I think someone has since suggested, haven't they, that it should be a gravel trap that comes back in at that point to make sure they can't happen, or a chicane or something to avoid it happening. You know, ultimately, Lewis's penalty was driving over the grass and hoping he was okay, and he was. Away you go.
If the grass had been wet, he probably would have flew off into the wall. But such a difficult way to penalise and judge.
And I guess Daniel Ricciardo would have been quite happy for both Lewis, Nico, and then Max to all get a penalty for going off track limits. And so they were leading the race, probably, which was presumably how it worked. Right, OK, well, we've got to talk about the other incident, haven't we, with Max and Seb, so let's do that in a moment. But first of all, don't forget, if you want to become one of our Patreons at the NRF1, all you need to do is visit www.patreon.com/NRF1, Patreon, Patreon. And come help us spread the F1 word and make it better, and also lambast the people in charge of stupid decisions like altering the track limit rules. And of course, if you want to leave us a review or any such feedback on iTunes, you can do that by heading over to nrf1.uk/isonitunes. You're listening to the NRF1 podcast on Audio Boom and on Future Radio. It's time for the NRF1 Pit Stops. And we are literally hovering between Ferrari and Red Bull, because this is literally between the two. What a final to the race we had. It was truly epic. We had a livid Sebastian Vettel, who was basically annoyed that Max Verstappen had gone off the track in trying to defend his third place behind the two Mercedes. That's right, isn't it? Vettel couldn't believe it. He felt that when Max went off, even though he never physically went behind Seb, he should have given up the place. That was the order they finished in the race, which led to Sebastian Vettel's radio message, which we should have a little listen to.
He's a... That's what he is. Am I the only one? Or are you not seeing what I'm seeing? He's just backing me off into Ricciardo.
Charlie said...
Yeah, you know what? Here's the message for Charlie. Off. Honestly. Off.
Now, in case you missed what he said, here is what he said. He, Verstappen, is a c***. Am I the only one, or are you not seeing what I'm seeing? He's just backed me off into Ricciardo. I don't think he said Ricciardo properly, but we'll leave Seb to that. Of course, at that point on the TV, he literally almost got overtaken by Daniel Ricciardo, which was brilliant. Move, for f***'s sake. He cut the chicane. He has to give me the position. End of the story. Before there was a little exchange about Charlie Whiting, who was said to be perfectly fine with Max's tactics, to which Vettel replied, yeah, here's a message to Charlie, f*** off, honestly, f*** off. And the great thing about the radio message, as you may have heard, was that the beep wasn't quite in the right position to cover the swearing, which we love. I, of course, have done it perfectly and all that, so don't worry, Steve. Epic radio work from Seb, quite rightly. So we have the situation where Max is in the green room thinking he's finished third. Channel 4 disappeared for a break, come back. Max is still in the green room. And then he's just found out that he's been demoted because of a 5-second yes. time penalty to, that would have been fifth, wouldn't it? Behind Daniel Ricciardo, his teammate. So Max's face is a picture. He gets sort of escorted off after having a little word with Lewis and Nico, who are like, okay, fair enough. Seb is chasing down. He arrives. He does all the podium celebrations. Hooray. And then literally, what, 3 hours later, 2 hours later, we find that Seb's been given a time penalty. Now, what was he given the penalty for exactly? It was for when Daniel tried to overtake him and he moved under braking, which is the new rule, which you're not allowed to do. He didn't move a lot, it has to be said. But obviously slagging off Charlie Whiting and all that sort of stuff was probably, you know, worthy of a penalty in itself. And then whilst all the podium celebrations are done and dusted, Seb's demoted to fifth. Max finishes fourth. Daniel takes the podium but doesn't get to do his shoey. Three drivers finish in the top three at some point over the course of the race. Anyone want to dissect where this all went wrong and right and happy with it and what have you?
Well, other people here might disagree with me, but I thought the penalty actually for Vettel was a bit harsh, a bit unnecessary almost. I didn't really think it warranted a penalty. I think maybe just a reprimand would have been better. I didn't think he really moved that much, to be honest. I was a bit surprised. To be honest, I wondered whether they would look more at Ricciardo, really, in that incident, and look at it a bit differently. But the point that they obviously took was the kind of Vettel's movement of the move in it. And I just sort of, when I looked at that again, I thought, it's a bit harsh.
Did you think Max was right to be penalised in the first place?
I did, to be honest. I like him as a driver, you know, and it would be easy for me to sit here because I like him as a driver and sort of say, well, no, but in the interest of fairness, I think it was about right, really. But I thought it was interesting because they gave him 5 seconds and obviously Vettel's was 10. And I thought that, not saying it should be the other way around, but I thought the actual sort of has happened incident was a little bit, warranted a little bit more of a penalty, but whether, you know, sort of they took into account Vettel's sort of temper on the radio and his language towards certain people and thought, well, let's give him a 10-second then. I don't know.
I mean, I thought I can probably, having seen the replays, see why Max was penalised, but I don't think I agree with it. I think it was actually pretty harsh because, again, he was already ahead of him. I think to me, he's already ahead of him defending, and then he's gone off the track. So that's it. You can't give away a place that you haven't lost on the racing track. That's how I feel about it. Like, you have to sort out the runoff areas if drivers are doing that. That's basically my issue. You can't do a retrospective penalty. I did like the fact that they then got it sorted out for the podium, because that's exactly how it should be, only for them not to do it because they penalised Seb and just given it to Daniel. So I don't know, it almost felt like the Daniel penalty, the penalty for the overtake or the defending on Daniel, was because they got it wrong in the first place with Max. That's how I feel about it, because I personally thought Max probably should have finished third. But I think I'm probably in the minority, and I can see you biting your lip, Carl.
Yeah, I thought Max was in the wrong. He should have given the space to Vettel.
Even though he was never actually behind Sebastian Vettel.
Yeah. In the same way, if, say, Rosberg had just been behind Hamilton on lap one, and just been him, and Hamilton done that, then I feel he should have given the space to, or the place to Rosberg. And did Red Bull or his engineer tell him to give him the space?
He did, yeah. He did. Which actually, when I heard that, I thought, no, what are you doing? But obviously they felt that was... they're obviously the rules, and they have been tweaked a lot this year, so...
Yeah, so then I thought he was wrong to then do what he did with the British blocking Vettel. So I thought that's fair. He got... We should, a five-second penalty. I don't know. I don't know why they can't just drop him back a place, but...
I guess it's weird that they would... Verstappen was told to give the place back, and he never did either. He completely ignored him, didn't he?
So that should have been immaturity. But then I suppose his argument was, well, he saw Hamilton do it, so why should I do it? But yeah. And then Vettel, I thought it was on the edge, Vettel's move on Ricciardo. And I also thought it was funny, he's one been moaning about Verstappen move under braking, and he's the first one to be done by the new rule. But because of his attitude on the radio and calling Charlie Whiting what he called him, then I think in a way he deserved the penalty, because you can't do that. But that does show, I think, shows where Vettel is in his career at the moment. I mean, he called Alonso a whatever in practice. He's moaning at him, which I don't know why he's getting irate. And then he even had Arriva Bene trying to calm him down, and I mean, Arriva Bene's pretty emotional the best of times.
But not the man to calm you down. No.
Yeah. And then, I think he's in a weird position at the moment, in a weird frame of mind.
I would completely agree with that. And we'll speak a lot more about Sebastian over the rest of the season, I'm sure. I mean, I didn't like the fact that Sebastian Vettel basically slagged off Charlie Whiting, and then Charlie turned up in the green room and was like, they were sort of making up on TV. I thought that was all really weird. Charlie Whiting didn't need to be there talking to Sebastian Vettel, almost saying sorry. That's not what it looked like.
I didn't see him.
Yeah, people just popped in, and it was like, why are you doing there, Charlie? You don't need to. Why are you interested? You know, just ignore it. But Charlie, I don't know, to me comes across as a little bit wet and probably quite affected in a situation where you need the race director to be quite strong. It just comes across that he gets affected by these things. So I might be completely wrong, but it's just my opinion. Well, there we go. I mean, all you want is the stewards to make all the calls so we know the race result when the race finishes. I hate it when that doesn't happen. So that's the really annoying thing about the race, sadly. And I thought it was great racing from Vettel and Ricciardo, but there we go. Penalties to come and go. Just want to touch on Sauber, so close to getting that first point, and they've been quite close in the last few races, and this first point is worth like 40 million quid between them and Manor. It's huge, Steve. Are they going to do it before the season's out? Two more races to go. They're pushing.
That's to be positive. Why not?
And if we're hearing about them, we haven't heard anything from them all season.
I know. You could almost forget that they're not even on the grid, you know. I don't really know what's happening at that team, really. We've heard a few conflicting stories as to whether they're financially finished or whether they're secure or whatever, but why not? Let's be positive and say, yep, they'll do it.
They'll do it. I mean, they've certainly had a bit of investment, and it does seem to have turned them around a little bit this year, so this will be the culmination of that, really.
Mm. What a drive from Ericsson to finish 11th. I mean, he damaged the first lap, pitted, and then done the whole race on that set of medium tyres to finish 11th. Sort of changed my mind on Ericsson. I thought he was a waste of time, to be honest, on the grid, but sort of this year he's done all right.
You mean Norfolk's Marcus Ericsson, yes. Of course. Norfolk's Marcus Ericsson. Just an honorary mention, Force India and Nico Hülkenberg, who seems to be back on form ever since he signed his Renault deal, which I guess is the way sport works sometimes, isn't it? Sergio Perez, a little bit unlucky, I thought, on his home race. didn't quite come off for him, whereas of course it did last year, didn't it? So I suppose that's the way it goes, isn't it? Okay, well, this is the NRF1 podcast with Audio Boom with Future Radio. It's time for our Of the Weekends. So, driver of the weekend. I wanted to give it to Sebastian Vettel because everything seemed to revolve around him. And not in a good way, but it was just about him almost.
So he got driver of the day, didn't he? The F1 driver of the day, haven't
he? Did he?
It's nonsense, isn't it?
Well, I literally had, off my sickbed, I had to mention Max winning it in Austin, because what a joke that was. I still can't believe it. Well, there you go. I mean, it was all about Seb. I mean, I don't understand why this vote has to be done before the check of, or, you know, once it closes, once the check closes. You can't vote for your driver of the day after the race is finished. How do you even deal with that?
It's anyway. Halfway through the race as well, doesn't it? It comes up, vote for your driver of the day. It's like still half the race to go. I mean, it's a nonsense.
Anyway, who was your driver of the day, more importantly?
Norfolk's Marcus Ericsson.
For reasons just said. Too true. How about you, Steve?
I can't disagree with that, actually. I can't find anything better than that, to be fair, so I'll go with that.
Beautiful. No, happy with that. I also wanted to be honorary mention driver of the weekend being Juan Pablo Montoya, who kept the most efficient podium questions I've ever seen. He just straight question, yeah, I'm done. No fannying around. Brilliant stuff. Well done, Juan Pablo. How about a team of the weekend? It was a bit tricky. Do we just give it to Mercedes for another one too? 17 out of 19 wins this season.
I suppose they had to manage some problems, in fairness to them. So, you know, why not? It's a solid finish with problems. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, that'll do enough. Pastor or Goat of the weekend? Pastor Maldonado of the weekend? I've got a couple of options here. There was Daniel Kvyat. Now, let me find my notes. His dive down on the inside, I think, on Romain Grosjean, I think he almost took them out. Or he literally drove straight past him, didn't he? And completely missed the turning on his dive on the inside. You just see Daniel Kvyat and just roll your eyes now when you see him trying to do things. So a bit of him, a bit of the stewards for all the like literally just sort it all out before the race finishes. And the person who was trying to beep the radio messages, because he did miss Sebastian Vettel's It was like, beep. Brilliant. Anyway.
Probably Raikkonen's... The strategy call on Raikkonen, why he came in when he did, when everybody else went to the end on the same sort of tyres. And also then why he didn't put the soft tyre on.
The medium.
When Vettel had just done 30 laps at the start of the race, and he was quicker than, he was actually quicker than Hamilton at the end of his stint. And then they bring Raikkonen in, when they got really nothing to lose, sticking behind Hülkenberg, and then on tyres that were lasting all day when he could have put a soft tyre on and given it a go. And we saw what happened when Ricciardo put the soft tyre on.
Yeah, he took like 15 seconds, yeah, didn't he, out of them?
I mean, if they hadn't been held up by the shenanigans with Vettel and Verstappen, he could even got towards Rosberg. So that just made no sense. And that does seem to happen a lot with Raikkonen. He just seems to come in occasionally, and he seems to be like the guinea pig for Vettel, really, in strategy calls.
Yeah, well, that's probably how it works. I mean, it happens a lot with Ferrari in general, doesn't it? Okay, good shout. Steve?
Just Ferrari in general. You know, I mean, for everything Kyle just said there, I suppose you can include Vettel as well, you know, for all of his rants and everything else, but just Ferrari in general.
Ferrari in general it is. How about highlight? I mean, the weekend, the end of the race I loved, even though I've slagged off the stewards and everything, the whole, after the race, Max's gestures, which apparently was a fist. Didn't look like a fist, I didn't think, when he was gesturing to Sebastian Vettel. He was giving him a fist, and Seb was giving him a pointy finger rather than his celebration finger. I mean, the fact that I've said that, you can picture in your own mind what the fist and the actual finger were, but there we go.
I got disappointed in Vettel, because he pulled up quite aggressively alongside him. I thought he's going to get out of the cockpit and sort of just, you know, start pointing and shouting at him. But it was just like a telling off finger wag, wasn't it? I thought, well, if you're going to do it properly, Vettel. You know.
I thought it looked a bit immature, really, to be honest. Yeah, it's like Carl said, that's what I expected. I expected him to just full-on rant what best you could do side by side as cars, and I just sort of thought, it's just a bit... just looks a bit ridiculous.
Go back to school, I think, is what Sebastian Vettel said, which is brilliant. Okay, any other highlights? Are we there?
Verstappen's attempt on Rosberg. I was just brilliant. I thought, like, well, why not? Let's give it a go down the inside.
They were ignoring him. He was chasing him down really well, actually, and he obviously went for it when, and that was it, really, wasn't it? He had his one go, but yeah, completely.
I've quite enjoyed the Perez massive battle away. Because I said before, you don't always need somebody to overtake for it to be interesting. It was just, he was literally half a second behind him the whole race, yeah, and just kept going and kept going and kept going. We just didn't work. And I thought that was quite interesting to watch.
He was getting quite a lot of cheering from the fans on that. Actually, you could actually, if you listen carefully, you could hear it every time he got close and the camera was on that shot. Yeah.
Oh, they were willing it. And the speeds, it has to be said, I think they were very close to breaking the record of the in the speed trap for the hybrid era. Did they do it? Maybe they did.
Bottas hit like 370?
Yeah, 372, I think. And I think 375 was a record. 373? It wasn't a lot. 376. Awesome, the speeds. Right, I think we'll wrap it up then. Just a couple of plugs. NRF1.UK is the website for blogs, tips and more, although we haven't done any in a while, it must be said. But, you know, we're chipping away at it. It's been a long season. It's a long season. Don't forget Twitter and Facebook. The handle you need is at the NRF1, so you can have a look there. And email us anything you want. You can email us your commentaries in the start of races. Richard Baxter's done a few which are brilliant. Basically, it's just you commentating on what happens on the start. It doesn't matter if we can hear the race in the background. It's absolutely brilliant. Just go for it. Hilarious stuff. So any of that, your audio views, you can also do that at nrf1.uk. Click on the red button, send us your audio of your rants, raves, and we can get them in the podcast. Absolutely no worries, especially when we look ahead to Brazil next week. So email us nrf1podcast@gmail.com, and of course we'll have a prediction league update next week as well. Kyle, are you feeling okay about all this?
Yeah, I can't actually remember what I predicted.
Probably best. No, I don't actually know what the results were. Of course, Steve, you were leading last time. Kyle, defending champion, I think. I can't remember now. Who won it last year? So Kyle, you're defending champion. Yeah. So how are you feeling about the championship running, Steve?
Quietly confident.
Oh, look at it. It's outrageous, says Kyle. Steve, Mercedes will win the next two races. Wait for it. Hey, no, brilliant. So we'll bring you right up to date with the prediction league as well. And if you want to get your predictions in, all you need to do is tweet them to us or post them on the Facebook page before the start of FP1 on the race weekend, which of course is Sao Paulo next, Brazil. Iconic stuff. Cannot wait for that. Two races to go, the World Championship is going to be exciting. Kyle, Steve, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Thank you everyone out there for listening. As always, we appreciate your ears, and again, the audience continues to grow, which is absolutely brilliant. We'll be back in about a week looking ahead to Brazil. Until then, enjoy yourselves. Good night.